Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Auto Central, South Africa's number one motoring podcast. My name is George Mini, your host, and I'm joined as usual by none other than 1D Lesishi. How's it, 1D?
Not too bad, George. How are you?
I'm good. Where can listeners find our show?
So if you want to get the show first, you can catch us every single Monday at 9 a.m. on cliffcentral.com. But if you want to see our faces, you could also find us on the Auto Trader SA YouTube channel. Alternatively, if you want convenience, you can also find and stream and download the show on Spotify or iTunes Music. Whatever you prefer, you can find us. And don't forget that on YouTube, please just hit that subscribe button, like the videos, and yeah, we'll be with you every single week.
Exactly. Thanks, 1D. So in the episode today, we're going to ask the question, what is the ultimate all-round, try and answer the question, should I say, what is the ultimate all-round vehicle and does it exist today?
Yeah.
I have some opinions. I think you probably have as well. And then later on in the episode, one of our expert journalists, Martin Pretorius, will join us to review the new 2021 Toyota Land Cruiser Prado VX-L. I should have said dash L, but we'll find out from Martin whether I should have said that or not later. And then lastly, as usual, we'll answer some of your burning questions from our Ask Auto Trader platform. So getting right into it, 1D, what is the ultimate all-round vehicle and does it exist today? Because in a car lover's world, we know South Africans love cars. South Africans love buckies, as a matter of fact. The ideal world would be to have a fleet of vehicles to pick and choose from to do depending different jobs depending on what's happening, you know, in your life, even when your mood. So the practicalities of doing that, however, keeping a fleet or a garage of cars is hard to achieve, notwithstanding the fact that it costs
it would be really expensive.
Really, really expensive, right? What car ticks all the boxes? It needs to be capable off-road, on-road, stylish, comfortable, and all-rounder. In your opinion, does this exist?
So on the way to the studio today, I thought about this intensely. And the short answer for me, I think a lot of people would be like, the perfect car doesn't exist because, you know, everyone has, you know, different preferences. But I believe that anything can be quantifiable. And I think that you can definitely have a scale where at least the majority of people kind of agree, and that would make it perfect. So I think it does exist.
Well, I mean, perfection is 100%. And if you say majority, well,
maybe not true perfection, but I mean, what are we going to do then if everything, I think everything can be measured.
Of course,
I think
it can.
It's kind of, you know, you have to take the subjectivity and the objectivity of things, and that would give you at least the closest we can get to true perfection.
Well, I think that's where the problem lies. It is, you know, things that you can measure like speed, horsepower, braking distance. Those are all measurable. You know, and you always want the best of those. So you want the most horsepower. You want, why would anybody want to drive a car that's slow?
Well, it depends. I think my grandmother would have a different opinion to that. And my girlfriend would also say speed is not my friend, at least.
Okay, so even if the speed of the car is measurable, okay, it's still subjective as to whether you want a fast or a slow car.
Then so it's perfect even to you. Maybe it's not perfect to everyone, but I think you can find a perfect car
for you. But does this perfect car exist? And maybe that's why we've got so many brands. Maybe that's why we've got so many makes, models, and variants, and the combinations of them and the different options. I mean, you know, I think we as a business at Auto Trader cleaned 11 million records when we were fixing our databases over the last couple of years. 11 million records. That's just insane.
Well, then why do we have competitions like, you know, Car of the Year? I think that's, as humans, we have to get as close as possible to understanding what is perfection, for something.
Well, isn't Car of the Year still subjective?
Of course it is. But
subjective to a bunch of journalists, subjective to the majority of consumers. So the subjectivity of car competitions comes out just in a majority. It doesn't mean that it's the perfect car, does it?
But it's based on a set standard, which the people who sets
the standard.
The people who
safety, I can understand, but you know,
I don't know. I strongly believe that because, for instance, our journalist, because they drive everything that's on the market, they would know what the benchmark is. And that should be the ruler or the scale where we kind of...
Yeah, but if somebody likes wooden inlays in their dash and a journalist doesn't like wooden inlays in the dash, that's going to count against the car in that journalist's opinion, right?
And that's why you have a panel of I guess, people who are kind of the journalists or the people who are making these rules.
Okay. So I suppose when you add more people to the subjectivity, you get objectivity.
Of course.
Or not.
And that can change. I'm not saying that it's an absolute forever. I think that level, that scale is a sliding scale, which is always changing depending on the needs of people.
Well, you know, do body types then, close this gap a little bit? Do you think?
I think so. So if you asked me, does it exist? I think it does. And what is it? I'm not sure. But I think body types are there to kind of solve for that. So because everyone's different and everyone has their different opinions and of what is perfect and what's ideal, body types kind of solve all of that. We spoke about crossovers last week and it was really, really interesting because it made me appreciate it more and think that maybe crossovers are closer to that that perfection scale.
Well, I mean, with the advancement of technology and engineering, you know, cars have moved from this boxy sort of machine to a work of art or a sculpture. Mm. You know, what is the, maybe that's why we have so many different shapes in SUVs. We've got the boxy type shaped SUVs and we've got the more sleek kind of bullet shaped, dolphin shaped SUVs.
Coupe kind of looking,
like for instance, the BMW X6.
Yeah. Can't stand it.
Can't stand it.
I love BMW, but,
and for some people, that's a perfect car.
It's a perfect car, right? And that's the beauty of it. I don't think, it's a definite, this is perfect. I think there's a percentage at least when you take the objectivity and the subjectivity and you get a score.
Do you think the SUV gets us closer? Because it's off-road, well, it's got some off-road capabilities in most instances. You can go off-road, you can carry more people.
I think it ticks a lot of those boxes.
I mean, in your girlfriend's case, you would want a slow SUV.
A really slow SUV. That's the thing. I think, I think SUVs, that's why they sell so much. That's why they're the fastest growing, because I think they tick a lot of the boxes that people think of when they're looking for the ideal or perfect car.
So the ultimate answer, I suppose, then is there are so many perfect cars. How do we find the perfect car? I suppose it just depends on who you ask.
100%.
You know,
what's the perfect car to you? Do you have
for me? No, I don't have the perfect car. I think there's a couple of perfect. Yes, I do have the perfect car. I lie.
Is it a Tesla?
It's a Tesla Model S.
Yeah, yeah.
With ludicrous.
Uh huh. And when the Roadster comes up, when the next.
Yeah, it's still not my perfect car because it can't carry, you know, more than a limited number of people.
Yeah.
Whereas the Model S just does it all. Maybe I'll change my mind. Model X.
So I don't know if you've seen the new e-tron, the Audi e-tron.
I have.
And do you still think that the Tesla?
Yes. it's like this thing, you know, Samsung. Could come out with a spaceship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless Apple really stuffs up, iPhone's going to be my favorite phone into infinity.
It's perfect to you.
It's perfect to me because I fell in love with it in 2008. I got my first iPhone and I've never used another phone. Never. I don't even know what it's like.
Yeah.
I've played around with them.
Yeah.
And I think they're clunky, but I've never used another phone. Yeah. So for me, that happened with the electric car and Tesla. Very early on, I went to the United States.
Yeah.
I actually got to get into a Tesla. And,
it was the first
electric vehicle I'd ever sat in.
Yeah.
And I think that plays a big part to falling in love with the car.
100%.
Is that first experience. So, you know, Tesla really got to really stuff up for me to dislike them or for me to put another car. The Jaguar I-Pace comes close. Comes really close.
I mean, that was the world car. Well, I think the world and the South African car of the year for a while.
True. And it's an SUV.
It's an
EV. So, you know, if you're new to car buying and haven't made a purchase in many years, it's hard to know where to start, right?
100%. You have to assess a lot of things which meet your requirements, and sometimes you don't even know what those options are, right?
So let's try and unpack a couple of things, and we've got three considerations here that help you find your perfect car. The first one is assess your needs.
Mm-hmm.
How does one assess the needs that you might have or might not have?
I think you have to assess your lifestyle if you can assess your needs. So what are the sort of things that you need to tick on your box? Do you have kids? Do you need multiple doors? Are you off-roading? Is it just a commuter car? Yeah. How long are you going to be in it?
How many people are you going to carry?
Those sort of things. And based on that, you are kind of closing the entire pool of vehicles to options which, you know, kind of match your needs.
So I suppose what you're saying is that how are you going to use the car
100%.
Is the question you've got to first ask yourself. So how many passengers, like you say, are you going to be driving highway, off-road? Do you need a car that, that can go off-road? Well, how long is your commute? Because fuel economy plays a big part. I mean, we spoke a couple of weeks ago with, diesel engines.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea to drive diesel engines in short distances.
Yeah.
So if you're doing short distances, avoid diesels. Do you need specific functionality inside? What's your favorite technology inside a car?
It's definitely the infotainment system, specifically my ability to connect my Spotify to the sound.
Yeah.
So some sort of Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And that's because everything, you know, my PlayStation's connected to my Spotify, my phone, my laptop, so it's just the infotainment system and the media capabilities.
Do you have an Android or an Apple device?
I use both.
Why?
Well, one's for work and one's for play.
Oh, personal and work phone.
Mm, precisely.
Which one's the work phone?
The Apple.
Okay.
Which one? Feels like propaganda. It feels like Apple propaganda right now.
Of course it is. Of course it is. They just work. A couple of other questions. I mean, my favorite thing is being able to use Apple CarPlay. That's an important feature. And that's my must have feature. It doesn't, but getting the right car does trump having Apple CarPlay.
I think it depends who you ask. I have seen some research saying that a lot of younger, audiences would actually disregard a car completely if it doesn't have some sort of
tech
capabilities of connectivity.
So think about if you need a reverse camera or, as they call it overseas, a backup camera. Mm-hmm. It's got nothing to do with backing up a computer. Leather seats.
Safety if you have kids. That's going to be, play a huge, role.
Yeah.
Safety
like,
the ratings,
what like car, car seats. What do you call them? Kids.
The baby seats.
Baby seats, yes, that's for baby seats.
We eventually got there.
It's the safety features, as you say. So emergency braking, lane departure,
all those kind of,
what's your favorite, or your must have safety feature?
Wow. I've actually never ever considered that before. I always just kind of assumed that the car was safe enough. But for me, if it can just kind of, like, have airbags. Uh-huh. Make sure the seat belts work.
I'll tell you a safety feature I've never experienced in action that I experienced a couple of weeks ago with the VW e-Golf.
Yeah.
I was driving on a longish road behind a particular, I can't remember the vehicle. And he decided, put on his indicator.
Yeah.
Okay. Decided to turn. Now your brain somehow predicts the slowdown rate.
Yeah, of the car ahead of you. Yeah.
Ahead of you. And you start to apply pressure to the brake pedal. So I did that. I started to apply pressure. So I predicted how he was going to turn.
Yeah.
What I didn't predict was that he was going to suddenly jam on brakes before he turned.
Okay.
In front of me instead of, he was going slow enough to do the turn instead of just smoothly turning into the corner.
Yeah.
And he jammed on brakes because there was a curb that both of us didn't see.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to go over the curb, fast. So he jammed on brakes. Wasn't his fault. And, I wasn't predicting that. The car predicted it.
And what?
As he slowed down, the e-Golf, the VW e-Golf applied maximum brake pressure. Everything in the car flew forward.
Yeah.
But I missed hitting the back of him.
And how much did that save you? You know, it's an extra, which
Well, I mean, saved you lots of money. Can't buy the e-Golf, so I don't know what it would cost on it, but it avoided an accident. I wouldn't want to have explained to VW why I crashed their car.
Yeah, one of six in the country.
Exactly. But that e-Golf definitely, I mean, I might have been able to avoid it, but I would have had to have turned and swerved to avoid it because.
But you don't have to do the thinking there. The car did it for you, right?
I wouldn't have reacted as fast as that car.
Yeah. It's always reading.
Yes, exactly. So then cargo capacity. What else would you consider?
I don't know. For my personal, like the size of my garage and my driveway is not. Like,
that's an important factor. Yeah.
Like if I had like a huge bucky, I would struggle every single day going in and out of my driveway. So yeah. I need something that's a little bit smaller than. Like a double cab.
Well, there's two things there. The first one is the size of your parking space. Cause as life goes on, we're getting smaller and smaller and smaller living areas.
Yeah.
So cars sometimes get bigger and bigger. Then the second feature is setting your budget. I think it's important that unless you're paying cash for the car, that you consider the financing options. They can come and bite you.
If not the most important thing. I mean, these are all really important, but budget, man, we know how the rates are. We know how people are notoriously bad with managing their money. And with something like a vehicle, this one's important.
Well, how much do you set as a budget for the car repayments? Well, the rule of thumb, according to Edmunds, is that your new car payment or your car payment should not exceed 15% of your monthly take-home pay. I think it's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah.
It kind of makes a good good way to look at the total cost. And then step number three, I would say, is weigh up the total cost of ownership. It's not only about the monthly repayment.
Yeah. There's so many other costs such as petrol, like you said earlier.
Insurance. Wear and tear, servicing,
the works. Accidents that might happen where you have to kind of pay additional. Mm. So just think about those sort of things in terms of, you know, how much are you actually paying versus the price that
plan to have
listed.
An accident. I know what you mean. Imported vehicles are more costly to repair than vehicles made. Yeah. But if two cars are priced exactly the same, it doesn't mean that they cost the same to run. But the other thought is equally important, I think. And the first part of that is one car might be expensive up front, but cheaper to run. And another car might be cheaper up front, but more expensive to run. And the example I can think of is an electric vehicle. It's much more expensive up front, but a lot cheaper to run.
In the long term, yeah, definitely.
In the long term. Mm. Well, that's all we have time for trying to find the perfect car. I don't think we've found it. Mine is Tesla Model S or Model X. So let's take a short break. And when we're back, we will be with Martin Pretorius to review the 2021 Toyota Land Cruiser Prado VXL.
Yeah. And who knows? There might be the perfect car in his books.
In his, not in mine. See you soon. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. And as I mentioned, we have none other than Martin Pretorius, one of our expert journalists here, to review the 2021 Toyota Land Cruiser Prado VXL. Welcome, Martin.
Hello, George. Thanks for having me here.
You're most welcome. And the 2021 Toyota Land Cruiser Prado VXL. Did I say that right?
You said that perfectly correct.
I always thought it was the Toyota Prado.
Me too.
Well, VXL is just a trim level.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so entry level is TX, then mid-level is VX. And then VXL is the top spec one that comes with all the safety add-ons like adaptive cruise and like keep.
What does VXL stand for?
Random letters.
Very, very, very extra large.
Letters combination.
No, I thought it was that instead of Toyota Land Cruiser Prado, it was Toyota Prado Land Cruiser.
Yeah, no, it actually comes from the Land Cruiser family.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So give us your impression, your driving impression and your opinion on this Toyota Land Cruiser Prado. I mean, first of all, the Land Cruiser has always been a popular car. The Prado's been a popular car because you've got the short wheelbase, long wheelbase.
Used to, not anymore.
Yes, exactly. They were very popular in their day.
Yeah, very capable.
You know, is this car going to kind of fill that gap?
Well, I'm going to be totally honest. I never really understood the Prado phenomenon.
Why? Well, like in South Africa or like just globally?
Well, in general.
Yeah.
If you wanted a proper off-road capable SUV, you might as well just buy a Land Cruiser. But now having lived with a Prado for actually a month.
Yeah.
It showed me why people buy the Prado instead of the big body Land Cruiser 200. Okay. It has all the same positive attributes, but you can actually fit it into a normal parking space or a normal sized garage.
What about that of a Fortuner? Does it not, why not just get a Fortuner then?
Fortuner is considerably less sophisticated.
Okay.
Considerably less sophisticated. I mean, it actually feels downright primitive in comparison to the Prado.
Wow. Why? What features does it have that make it so?
It's not so much about the features. It's about the noise insulation, the ride quality, okay, the general refinement when driving.
Almost like a Land Rover.
No, the Prado actually drives.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, in South Africa, it's been extremely popular, going back years. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask, based off...
The Prado or the Land Cruiser?
The Prado, specifically. Yeah. I mean, you've driven previous kind of editions of this car. Yes. Is this a definite step up?
Definitely. It looks pretty much exactly as it did after the last facelift at the end of 2017.
Yeah.
But the important bit actually happened in the drivetrain, where the Prado now finally has the new GD6 engine and the 6-speed Autobox instead of the old D4D with a 5-speed.
Mm.
And it has this new combination has transformed the vehicle. It's lighter on the fuel. It's a lot nicer to drive. It's quicker. It's better on overtaking.
It's more complete.
It's a score on all fronts.
Amazing, amazing. And, you know, any negatives about this car? Because all we're hearing is positives.
It's positive, yeah.
If you're interested in a car with sporty handling, this is not the car for you.
Mm.
However, if 99% of your driving consists of heavy traffic, or freeway cruising, or long distance cross-country driving, this is perfect. And I'll tell you why. It has adaptive suspension, which literally smooths out whatever bumps or potholes you could throw at it.
Mm.
It has the ground clearance you need to go literally anywhere. I mean, I actually took this thing off-road along with a bunch of modified Land Rovers, and it went everywhere that they did.
In standard configuration.
Standard configuration.
Interesting.
So it's massively capable off-road. It's beautiful and quiet and comfortable and spacious on-road. And it has one party trick that I'm yet to see in another car.
Uh-huh.
The center console cubby is an armrest.
It's not an armrest. It's a flipping bed.
Yes, but there's actually a fridge inside there, a proper fridge, not just some.
Okay, I was going to say Land Rover has the same feature.
No, this is not just some cocoonish air blowing into it. There's literally a fridge built in with the copper piping. It runs off the compressor, aircon compressor. And it's so well insulated that I actually forgot after a road trip, I forgot my cool drinks in the car. Overnight and for the rest of, for the next day. And that night I got back into the car and everything was still cold. So it really works really, really well. Room for a six pack of soft drinks or water, not beer. Not drink and drive ever.
Yes. It's a 7-seater, right? It's
well, I mean, to all the SAPS out there, Land Cruiser Prado, you know, look in the center console. Sorry, Toyota drivers. So price of this Land Cruiser?
Right. So this top spec one I had, 1.1 million rand.
Okay.
This is the VXL.
Just looked on Auto Trader and the 3-liter DT VXL. I don't know if it's the same thing.
No, that's the
previous version. It goes for 1 million rand. So 1.1, there's one going for 1050. So, you know, 1.1 for the newest spec. It's not bad.
It's actually a bit of a bargain considering all the advantages. And then on top of everything else, there's an upgraded infotainment system with Android Auto and Apple CarPlay.
Hmm.
So you have it all.
It's the perfect car. It's
almost, car. Almost. Interior. I mean, Toyota, especially the Fortuners, had this habit. I used to own a Fortuner. I love them. So don't, I mean, I'm not dissing the car, but I had this habit, and I've seen this in the Land Cruiser, of having this light interior with no option to go black.
So it was the same with this one.
Is it the color black?
Beige upholstery from the window line down and black on top.
You can't go full black.
Oh, you can, but then you have to settle for a TX spec and give up a whole bunch of the nice goodies that comes with the VXL.
If you want all the creature comforts, you've got to go for the light interior.
The upshot is, however, the leather upholstery is extremely high in quality. Mm. Everything is very well put together. There's no rattle or squeak or shudder or anything inside the cabin. So it's very, very well screwed together. The one thing that I didn't like, believe it or not, was the wood inlays on the steering wheel. At the top and
so
at the bottom of the steering wheel.
It's so old school. I thought they would have got rid of that.
Mm. Yeah. So that I found that really, really puzzling. But for the rest, it's extremely easy to operate, and it's very, again, it comes back to that one word, comfort. This car
driving
is
your couch.
Perfect antidote to traffic stress.
Oh, it's like me driving a Land Rover. Same story. Sorry. Hasn't stopped on me, but
yeah,
give it time.
Cruise. It was like when I had the SRT, different story, because you put your foot on the fuel of that thing and it jumps forward.
Yeah.
Yep. Whereas this one, it takes its time. You have to kind of drive carefully and calmly and all that stuff. Anyway, so Martin, your score out of 10.
I'd give it 8.5.
Parking. 8.5. I thought you loved this car.
I loved it. The problem is the price tag is still a little bit steep for my liking. It carries about a 25% price premium over an equivalently equipped Fortuner. And I'm not sure that it is actually 25% better than a Fortuner.
Okay, so the other car that got an 8.5 from our expert journalist was the BMW 4 Series 420D. Mm-hmm. Very different car, but also scored an 8.5. Cars that have outscored the Toyota Land Cruiser Prado is the Toyota Hilux Legend.
Yeah, interesting.
Who has got a 9. The Mercedes-Benz AMG A-Class 835, which has got a 9, and the Suzuki Vitara Brezza, which has got a 9. What do you think of that?
Well, I haven't driven the Brezza yet.
Yes.
The other two I can understand.
You can?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, especially because I gave the BMW 420D that 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're happy with your 8.5 score in that case. And, there you have it.
Yeah. Just one question. So, well, more of a comment. I see that the lower spec TX is actually about 200,000 cheaper than this one.
Yes.
So serious value for money.
Serious value for money. And you get the same brilliant diesel engine with TX spec as well. So if you can do without
the
safety add-ons and all the other nice things.
Do you get the fridge?
You still get the fridge.
Okay.
So,
the fridge is there.
Buy a TX.
I'm just wondering if
you're
paying
everything you need.
200 grand for a fridge.
Okay,
well, that's all we have time for, unfortunately. Thank you very much, our expert journalist, Martin Pretorius, for coming in and giving us the rundown of the 2021 Toyota Land Cruiser Prado VXL. Sounds like a beautiful car to drive, and I'm pretty sure that Martin was gutted to give it back.
I was.
Great stuff. Yeah. And when we come back, we're going to answer your burning questions from our Ask Auto Trader platform. Thanks again, Martin. See you next time.
Thanks, George. Thanks, Mondi.
Thanks, Martin.
And welcome back. That was a very interesting review by Martin of the 2021 Toyota Land Cruiser Prado VXL. Sounds like a car that I want to drive. I prefer the comfortable cars lately.
I would like to see how it goes up against the Fortuner. And I'm not sure what the price point is of the Fortuner, but
I don't know if you can compare. Hey,
you don't think so?
No, it's a different car.
Completely
different car.
Yeah, it seems complete. And for that price, it's definitely something you should consider if you're in the market.
It's like comparing a Tesla with a Golf Chica.
Yeah, this propaganda continues.
Anyway, so every day people send Auto Trader some motoring related questions about all things car buying and car selling. Yeah. So Wandy and I have now pulled out some questions, burning questions that you have. And Wandy, what's the first question?
First question comes from Gamogelo, who's asking, how trustworthy are the small dealerships that are on Auto Trader?
Well, Kamakhela, that's like asking, you know, whether you should trust a short person or a tall person. It depends. Yeah, you know, there's no such thing as putting a trust stamp on a small dealership or a large dealership.
Yeah.
They could easily equally be trustworthy or untrustworthy,
yeah,
depending on their own behaviors. So, you know, at the time of the listing, we do our best to
kind of do diligence.
At the time that the customer comes on board, we do our best to try and do some due diligence around, what kind of a dealership are they?
Yeah.
Are they good for the consumer by and large? What they do in the background, we can't vet. We can't check up on them all the time in terms of their behavior, what type of service they give, et cetera, et cetera. So your best bet, Kamakhela, is always, 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 always go and check at what the public says.
Yeah.
Go onto Facebook, go and see if there are reviews. Go onto Hello Peter, see if there are reviews. And then for your own peace of mind, go to autotrader.co.za/safety-and-security, our safety and security page. And there's some hints as to, guidelines that you might find useful.
Yeah.
So the short answer is, I know a lot of small dealerships who are very trustworthy.
Yeah. Just about as trustworthy as any big, and big ones who are less trustworthy.
Similarly, probably not trustworthy either. Yeah. So, you know, so don't put trust stamp on size.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair. Next question.
Good advice. Second question comes from Veli. Leo's asking, I work as a health professional. Can I buy a car with just a proof of appointment letter? So they don't have a pay slip. They just have the proof of appointment.
Unfortunately, Veli, how do you say her name?
Velile.
Yes. There we go. Sorry about that. Velile, unfortunately, a letter of appointment is not going to suffice. So financial institutions need this to know the state of your finances, probably will ask for bank statements and verify your income, more than just looking at a payslip or a letter of appointment. So letter of appointment doesn't mean that you have been paid that money for the last couple of months. So I don't think that will suffice. No.
In your opinion, how long do you think she should wait until?
Well, a couple of months. I think banks now ask for 3 or 6 months of bank statements.
Okay.
Wait a couple of months and make sure you got a clean credit record. Next question.
Last question comes from Etienne, who's asking, please tell me if it's legal or ethical for dealers to still advertise the vehicles without VAT.
I think we've addressed this question before, but let's visit it again. And that is, dealers can't, according to our rules at Auto Trader, list vehicles exclusive of VAT.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The VAT Act, to my knowledge, does make mention of the fact that if a price is VAT exclusive, you've got to say that it's VAT exclusive.
Yeah.
We don't provide the ability for a dealer to make that claim.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally tens of thousands of vehicles on a daily basis
on the site. It doesn't mean that dealers won't attempt to list the vehicle without VAT and try and put the description the fact that it's exclusive, but we discourage it and we don't allow it.
Yeah.
If you see a vehicle that is listed with exclusive of VAT in the description, please send it to us so that we can address it with that particular dealer, because it's not part of our business practice. Yeah. So to say whether it's ethical or legal, I don't think that's the right question. Auto Trader's rules are every price listed on Auto Trader should be listed inclusive of VAT, because we don't make provision for the ability to make mention of a price being listed exclusive of VAT. That's the short answer.
Kind of going back to the first segment that we had, once again, don't think that the price that you see is the total cost of ownership.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Well, that's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. And my name is George Meany, your host, and I've been joined by One Deal SC Share. It's been epic. See you next time.
Sounds good.